Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
Like you said, he had to come in.
Pilar drives one to left center field. He hit that one well. Is it another one? Yes, it is. Kevin Pilar's home run tear continues. 3-0 Giants.
On the ground. They're going to come home. And they did not get him. They're going to say Iannetta was off the plate. And this game is over. Pilar hits a high drive. Left center field. It is out of here. High drive. Left field. It is out of here. And it's a tie ball game. And that's the first hit of the game for the Giants.
Well, it's Monday, April 15th, 2019, and this is episode 161 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and you just heard a bunch of wonderful highlights, mostly Kevin Pilar hitting a lot of home runs this week, and a little Kratz walk-off fielder's choice nestled in there, but we had a good week, and I'm here with Eric Nathanson to talk about a winning week of Giants baseball. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well. I'm ready to put the new name on the podcast and call this the Pilarcast and ride the wave that is the bolt of lightning Kevin Pilar has been for this team. It's nice. The Giants had a winning week, so it was good to watch Giants baseball this week. It was a lot more enjoyable than it had been for the first week and a half of the season.
So I'm sensing that Kevin Pilar so far is probably an upgrade from a Connor Joe or Michael Reed.
I mean, it's working out. You say, like, Farhan went for Joe and Reed to start, but I think this Austin Pilar upgrade, I think, is an upgrade. I mean, it's amazing at what Pilar has been able to do. He seems to just ignite the offense.
Yeah, it's been a great week of Giants baseball relative to what it was. And here we're talking about a week of 4-3. It wasn't like an unbelievable week, right? It wasn't 5-2 or 6-1 or 7-0. But I mean, hey, we'll take any winning week right now with Giants baseball, especially where they were. So we'll take it. And Kevin Pilar was definitely, boy, if they did not have him, the Giants would have lost probably 5 of the 7 games, but easily, I'd say.
And they lost the one he hit the grand slam in.
Like, yeah, that was
the one swing of the bat that had the most impact. They lost.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's go ahead and talk about the week. That was we'll start with that one. That was an interesting game because it was a Madison Bumgarner start, and he's looked pretty good at the beginning of the year, and here he is staked to a 5-0 lead. And to be honest, I was kind of thinking myself, even though Giants are eternal pessimists, it seems like, with torture baseball, but with Mad Bum on the hill and a 5-0 lead and all that momentum going, it was like, oh, this game's over. This game's over. And, you know, Bum let him kind of sneak back in a walk and a bomb, and then it just kind of trickled out from there, and they ended up losing that game with 6 unanswered runs. From the Padres, so that was unfortunate. That was a game definitely the Giants should have won. Overall, statistically, their pitching has been stellar, so it's not like it's not more than just a blip on the radar. But it was disappointing because those are the games that the Giants need to win. They're going to squeak out a bunch of these 2-1, 3-2 wins, but when you're staked to a 5-run lead with that pitching staff, that's when you got to step on their throat, and they didn't do that.
No, they didn't have a chance to either, and credit goes to the Padres. Like I talked about on the preview show, and we've seen them 7 times now this season. They're a good team, and both Myers and Tatis Jr. were able to tag Bumgarner. And it was funny because that day we talked about how the bullpen had given up in a homer, and then Maranta comes in and gives up the Maranta homer to Franmil Reyes to put the end to the comeback for the Padres. So it did kind of come out of nowhere, but the pessimist Giants fan was like, all right, this makes sense. It's just usually it's the Dodgers that are doing that. Like, you know, there's times I remember them jumping out to like 4-0 leads against LA and they lose the game like 6-4 or 7-4 or something like that, because that offense can explode. So that's what happened to them. But the next night, the Giants put together like probably their most impressive victory of the season by scoring 7 runs, 6 of them in the second inning. It was the first time they'd scored in the first 3 innings all season, and they put up a 6 spot in the second off of Padre starter Lucchesi in the second game. It was good to see the offense come through, and again, Pilar right there in the middle of it. The guy hit a double with the bases loaded, cleared the bases, kept that inning going.
Yeah, they had a 7-0 lead, and the Padres scored 2 late runs, but they held on 7-2. Like you said, Pilar was in the middle of that offense again with the bases clearing double. He had 4 RBIs that game, as well as 4 RBI the previous game. So that was 8 ribbies in 2 games, and everyone's like, wow, where did this come from? In fact, I guess they said it was the first time since 2002 or 4, I can't remember the stat, when Barry Bonds had 8 RBI in 2 games. So it's been a very long time. And of course, it took a superstar that did it previously to have had knocked in that many runs in a short amount of time. So he's just provided such a spark to this team. He's a welcome addition. So they call him Superman. He also made a couple of fantastic diving catches in the outfield to save some runs. So he's doing it from both sides of the plate, or both sides of the field. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, it's weird to think that as Pilar goes, the Giants go right now. I have a friend who's a Blue Jays fan. I have a few friends that are Blue Jays fans, and they all say that Pilar is always red hot in April and that he'll cool off. But, you know, at the moment, that's fine. You know, they're riding his wave a little bit. Seems like he and Longoria have a thing going where they're getting to be close buddies. And so, you know, the clubhouse itself seems to be more inclusive and everybody's getting along right now. So when a guy like that comes in, and he's got a renewed sense of purpose playing for a different ball club, because it's got to be a whirlwind. Yeah. Like, Pilar's lucky that the Giants had this long-ass homestand right after he got traded. Yeah, he went to L.A., but then he came home, and the Giants were home for 10, 11 days altogether. Yeah. So he was able to get acclimated, and I think it showed in the San Diego series with the grand slam and the double and basically keeping the entire Giants offense afloat. But then they still couldn't, you know, get a series win, and they got shut down by – what's this guy's name? Margivius? Margivicious?
Margivicious? I don't know.
Marge Simpson shut them Marge down. Simpson. Yeah.
Margivicious?
She is. She's the listen lady. But
Derek Rodriguez got caned. He had a great game. He allowed 2 runs in 6 innings, and they lost 3-1. You know, Manny hit his first home run of the year. Manny Machado, that is. And he had a nice defensive play, too, that saved some runs. So, you know, it was another traditional Giants loss. They had good pitching, no hitting. And unfortunately, they did drop the series to the Padres, who are currently in first place. They are a good team, and they've opened up the season against some, you know, the Padres, the Dodgers, and the Padres. So it was like boom, boom, boom. And then now they got a little bit of soft with the Rockies, which is great. I mean, the Giants needed someone to beat up on. And they did. They did. They took 3 out of 4 from the Rockies, and that was just boy, what a welcome sigh of relief. I mean, that's just – after the Padres series and opening up the homestand, you're just going, man, is this team going to win 60 games this year? I mean, it really was kind of looking like that. I mean, obviously, you know, I don't think they're going to lose 100 games, but it still was kind of getting a little worrisome. But they go right in to the next game to open up the Rockies series, and you're thinking Rockies, you know, consummate hitters, even though they're on the road, home run hitters – Shark is pitching. The Giants have no offense. I honestly was going into this game thinking, oh, this is going to be a crooked number. This is going to be a bad loss. This is going to be their first blowout of the season. Could not have been more wrong. Could not have been more wrong. Not only did Shark dominate, I mean, he just absolutely killed it. The Rockies only ended up getting 3 hits that entire game, and he pitched 7, I believe, of shutout ball. But the Giants only scored 1 run, and that's thankfully all they needed that night, and they won. A nail biter, 1-0. Will Smith got his 4th save of the year. Samardzija got his first win, and Gray moved to 0-3, even though he pitched very, very well for the Rockies. So that was uplifting, to say the least. And, of course, it was Kevin Pillar who hit a home run in the seventh to break the tie that won the game. So Pillar to the rescue once again.
I mean, with that one swing, he got Samardzija the win, as well as the Giants the win. So it was a double dose. Had he hit in the eighth after the bullpen had already, you know, come in the top half, it wouldn't have been a win for Samardzija. That's funny. That is the first Giants game that I missed this season. And it's because at the moment I sat down and watched the game, my cable and internet went out.
Yeah,
like literally the moment I sat on my couch, ready to put it up, 9:45 local time, my time. And it was out all night long. So I didn't, you know, I came to see highlights afterwards. And I read about Samardzija, how this year he's taking a different approach. In the past, he has tried to stretch himself out. So he'll go through the order three times and eat up innings. But this year, he's understanding that with the way teams are using bullpens now, he's just going to let it go in the first two times through the order. He doesn't need to save a pitch for the third time through the order because he might not make it there. Mm-hmm. And ironically, he pitched seven innings and made it through the order almost the full three times against the Rockies that night. But it was because he kind of let loose and he was using his cutter a little bit more. He might bring his curveball in a little bit earlier in the game, and it seemed to help him out. I mean, so I guess Samardzija always had it in him, but we hadn't seen that in a couple of years at all. It was his best start as a Giant.
It was also his first win since June of last year. So it was great to see. And the Shark has been mysterious because despite his propensity for giving up the long ball, he'll do this. He's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde before he got injured. I mean, he'll lay an egg and allow six runs in four innings. And the next start, he'll allow one run over seven. I mean, that's kind of who this guy is. Last year was a horrible year. I'm hoping it was an outlier with that ERA over six. But in the year previous, you know, an ERA over four something. But again, it was kind of like he'd get blown out and then he would shut him down. Get blown out, shut him down. You didn't know which Samardzija was going to come out. And I'm hoping with his health now and him kind of just settling down and not saving that pitch and just adopting the changes he's made this year, he's going to be a different pitcher. Not expecting anything insane, but hey, anything, you know, an ERA of four under for Shark would be a very successful year, and I would not be disappointed with that, despite the money he's making.
I mean, you've talked to the man. He is smart. Now, if he can take those smarts and use them to adjust as he gets older and be a better pitcher, you know, more power to him. That's kind of, I think, what the Giants were hoping for when they signed him. And they don't need better than a 500 pitcher at this point out of him.
No.
He's a three or four starter.
What's interesting is that his velocity is down about 3 miles an hour right now on average. And so a lot of people were kind of concerned about it. But when you look at his control is precision right now. And so I think he's letting a little off the gas and he's caring more about where he's placing the ball, which of course we know is 90% of pitching anyway. It's location, 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 just like real estate. I mean, Greg Maddux is a prime example of that. You know, he didn't throw the ball hard at all, but he was a magician. He would just dance all over the strike zone and nail exactly where he wanted to go and keep you off speed and throw a curveball, then the changeup, then the fastball, sneak it in, you know, at 89 miles an hour and get you looking. So that's the way I think Shark has to evolve, because he does have the arm to throw 97, but he's consistently throwing 93, 94, maybe topping out at 95. So he's dropped a little bit, but man, I was watching that game and to see where, I can't remember if it was Kratz or Posey catching, but where he was setting up, he was nailing the target most of the time. I mean, he really was consistent, and that's what's great, because when he's giving up those home runs, that's exactly what happens. They put the catcher puts his target out and it just leaks back in over the plate, high middle, and it just gets tanked. So it really is location. All these guys can hit 97 mile an hour fastballs. That's not the question. The question is, can you hit something that's dancing around the zone and keeping you off balance? And so he looks really, really good so far. Really happy about that. You know, maybe Shark will have a little bit of a renaissance, I guess you could say. They won that game 1-0. Sorry, I'm going through the schedule here. Next game, they pulled off. They won the first three against the Rockies. The next game was a 3-2 win, another squeaker. So the first two games,
the
even though they took
18 inning game,
three out of four. The first two games were squeakers, a 1-0 win and then an 18 inning win. So it's not like that. Everyone's happy about the Giants, and I'm happy about the Giants winning 3 out of 4 against the Rockies. That's great, but it's not like they just dominated the Rockies. A 3-1 series win looks like domination, but which kind of tease out each game. The Rockies easily could have taken 3 out of 4. They could have won that first game. That was a 1-0 Giants win. They easily could have won the extra inning game. And that just swings the series back in their favor. So this is the way the Giants are going to live all year. And that's why it's living on this edge of a blade is going to be torture again. It's just going to be really, really hard with the excellent pitching and no offense. You're going to get these low scoring games that will take that timely hit, will take Maranta coming in and striking out three in a row with runners on base. That's what it's going to take to be successful at any level in this season for the Giants. They're just playing with, you know, not a lot of weapons.
No, and that's why I've always said that they're, you know, they literally are shaking out exactly how I think they are. They're a competitive bunch with some talent. And you mentioned close games. Their biggest win was the 7-2 margin over the Padres on Tuesday, 5 runs. Their biggest loss, surprisingly, was yesterday when they got shut out 4-0 by the Rockies.
Yeah, that's their biggest loss of the year. Exactly.
Every other loss has been within 2-3 runs. So they're hanging in there, and they are that one hit away. But that's why if they're evenly matched, that one hit might not come until like the 18th inning. And I mean, that 18th inning game, I'll admit personally, I didn't stay up for the entire thing. I did fall asleep with a tablet in my bed playing the game, and it was about the 13th inning, but I couldn't make it. But that game was, that had everything. There was a balk called on Drew Pomeranz early that ended up giving the Rockies a run on a play by Brandon Belt. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
And that was a bullshit call too. I mean, the ball—it was a phantom balk. But what are you gonna do?
Well, I really think it was a balk.
Well, you did go to umpiring school. No, that's good. Yeah, actually,
I'm not trying to.
Good to hear your perspective.
Yeah, I'm not trying to play that trump card. I'm not trying to tell fans they're wrong. But as I saw it as an umpire, because I'll be honest with you, no matter what game I'm watching, mm-hmm. when there's a close play, when something happens, I zoom in, I focus, I try to make the call at the same time. I don't like get excited and go, oh no, what's going to happen? You know, usually I have an opinion right away. But with the Pomeranz balk, every other time there was base runners on and he came down to the, you know, set position, he stopped and he paused. He didn't just slightly change direction for one brief second like Kruko was trying to sell. He paused. There was a legit, you know, pause, looked at runners and pitched. That time he didn't. He just went right through. There was no pause. Huh. Meaning not only did he not pause, it was a variation in his normal pitching delivery.
I can understand that argument. Okay.
As an umpire and in umpire school, what they taught us is a balk is basically trying to deceive the runners. So what you're looking for is a pitcher to do something out of his normal delivery, out of his normal stretch set position. And in that instance, Drew Pomeranz did something different than he normally does. And the second base umpire, I don't know who made the call, he saw it, picked up on it, and made the call. He doesn't know when he calls balk as the pitch is being delivered that the guy's going to pop out to Brandon Belt. He has already called balk before that ball reaches the plate. So it's not like the umpires in that, you know, moment said, oh, wait a second, he balked and came back and talked about it. But to me, as an umpire, as somebody who trained, that's why they called it, because he did something different than he normally does. And that's why I totally understand them doing that, because it was done out of deception.
Okay, I can understand that argument and that point of view. So basically what you're saying is that his normal pause is longer. And so even though that delivery, technically there was a momentary pause, it was so much quicker than his normal delivery. That's where the interpretation of deception comes in, and therefore the
balk
call. Okay.
It would be like if Johnny Cueto did his shimmy while delivering the ball from the stretch. He cannot do his shimmy because it is a change in his normal delivery. He can do it all he wants out of the windup. He can shimmy. He can, you know, pause. He can turn his entire body, but he can't do that. If there's a runner on second and Cueto delivers 3 pitches to the plate and it's his normal delivery, and then on the 4th pitch, he turns his front knee towards second base like he's going to throw there, but then delivers the pitch, that's a balk because it was deliberate deception that was done differently than your normal delivery.
I got you. Okay, I'll buy it from the umpire here in the room.
Nice.
It was just it is true because I did not see that particular play live, and I was watching the game in and out. So it's true that me and probably most fans who saw the highlights or just parts of the game, they don't have the context that you just explained from the other umpires. So the umpires are looking at his normal cadence and his normal delivery, and if that changes, because you know, I agree that most people are saying, on the replay. Well, he did pause. Yeah, it was only like a moment, but he did pause. So technically, that's not a balk. But what you're saying is no. Regardless of if he technically paused or not, it was much quicker than his normal delivery, and that's where the interpretation comes in. So I buy it. And I don't like it, but I buy it.
Right. Live, the umpire saw that he changed direction, because that actually used to be the basis. As a pitcher, you used to just be able to bring your glove down and bring it back up, and that would count because you changed direction. But if you had been a pause, and not a change direction pitcher, they're going to notice something like that. So it caused the Rockies to get a free run, which basically extended the baseball game.
It was a doubleheader.
13 innings beyond that. I mean, this 18-inning game, the Giants bullpen pitched 13 innings, struck out 19 batters all on their own.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, the effort that was put up by everybody in the bullpen. Melanson has proven to be stepping up this year. The fact that Gott and Vincent gave three innings. Nick Vincent, who knew? It was kind of like
Nick Vincent, Trevor Gott, and all these guys are doing so well.
It was very reminiscent of the game against the Nats, and then Brandon Belt goes and, you know, is 1 foot away from a home run.
Oh man, I know, so close. No, you know, the Giants ended up striking out 24 Rockies in that 18-inning game, and of course, famously, they ran out of K's on the board, which they've never done before. So you had some very involved fans that got up there and used their bodies as the additional K's. And to their credit, they were doing the correct swinging K and looking K, which was great. So
that was so much fun. Who knew 21 was the number? I never knew 21 was the...
I didn't know that either. Like, you know, I don't know why they produce 21 and go, we're never going to need more than that.
Right.
Like, why not have 30 just in case, you know? Like, it was just kind of funny. But, yeah, 24 strikeouts in 18 innings, that is fantastic. I mean, that is, you know, well over a strikeout an inning. So the Giants did very well. They held them scoreless for whatever it was, 10 or 11 consecutive innings. And they pulled it out with that fielder's choice in the ninth, or the 18th, the ninth, the second ninth inning, you can call it. And Eric Kratz, you know, it was an anticlimactic. I know I played the highlight at the beginning of the show, but it was kind of weird because now, to Eric's credit, remember, he's 3 hours ahead of the West Coast. He's in Georgia. So when he's falling asleep, he's 3 hours ahead of us. I was going to bed when it was going to the 17th inning. I was like, I had to work the next day. So, I mean, it was after midnight. I had to go to bed. But I did wake up in the morning and saw the highlights, and it was kind of anticlimactic. It was like the slide at home plate, and they're like, he's safe, and he pulled his foot in. Oh, wait, it's going to be reviewed. Okay, well, we're going to wait. And then, you know, it was like,
he's safe. It was so stupid. It was so clear. It was clear in real time. I was watching in my office sitting here the next morning, and I watched the play. I immediately screamed out. I'm like, oh, he's off the base. Now I get how they won. Okay.
Well, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but I'm going to paraphrase, but Brandon Belt in his forever sarcastic attitude. I love the guy. He is just one of the funniest. He is absolutely the most fun guy to interview out of all the Giants have ever interviewed over the last 8 years or whatever. He is just dry wit. He treats everyone the same. He doesn't blow anyone off. And he's just always in for the comedic line. He loves it. He just loves the comedy. And he said, yeah, you know, I'm pretty much the greatest 18th inning player ever in all of baseball. So
He is. Who else has done that?
Oh, I love him. He is just awesome. But, you know, freaking Eric Kratz, man, he caught all 18 innings. That's insane.
I couldn't imagine. My knees cannot imagine. I caught a lot of games. I could not imagine.
What? He's 38 years old. He's only, what, 7 years younger than me? That's insane. And he's catching 18 innings and getting the game-winning RBI. It's just crazy. Wow. So kudos to him. He's playing for whatever, his 13th or 14th major league team. You know, he's a journeyman. He knows his career is about to end, and he's just squeezing every little drop that he can out of this ride. And
all 18 innings.
I love it. Yeah, he's going to look back on this. And they were asking him, have you ever caught 18 innings before? Did you see that recall clip? Oh, my gosh. I wish I should have had it brought up. It was incredible.
Pittsburgh,
he was like, June 2016, blah, 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 was pitching, and da, da, da. And he recalled every single stat, who got the game-winning hit, who did this, who did that. And the clip was called, like, Eric Kratz has incredible recall. I watched that clip, and I was like, holy shit, he's like Rain Man. Like, what the hell?
It's impressive when ball players can do that. You'll hear them do that in the booth sometimes. You know, somebody will bring something up and they'll immediately be like, it was a slider low and away. And it's like, how do you remember that?
I can't remember yesterday, Eric. I don't.
I forgot today was Monday. So I don't know how they know these things.
Oh, my God. So awesome. So that was a fantastic win. And then the next day, Bumgarner finally got his first win of the year, a 5-2 victory over the Rockies, winning the first three of the series. And that was great. In fact, Bumgarner went into Bochy's office apparently that day and said, I'm good for 140 pitches, because the bullpen was taxed from the previous night going 18. And that was the other hard part about it, is that the previous game Friday was a night game, and it went to basically 1 a.m., and they got to turn around and play at, you know, whatever, 1:15 the next day. So they got 12-hour turnaround. And so he was like, I'm good for 140, which Bochy said, I appreciate that, Bum, but well, it was, you know, blah, blah.
Did you hear the story that Bum went home to sleep in the tent?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he said he got up to pee in the middle of the night and checked, and they were in the 14th. And he went back to bed. And then he got up again at like 4 in the morning to pee again, I guess. I guess Bum's old like us.
Wow. And got a prostate issue.
Right? Some nights I can make it through, Bum, and I'm like 10 years older than you. And then he checked and saw that they won, so he went back to sleep for a little longer. But yeah, apparently he went and slept. And he was also angry at himself that he couldn't pitch more than to one batter in the eighth inning. He wanted to go at least 8 innings.
Yeah. Now he allowed 2 runs through 7 plus. It was a good win. The Giants added 2 in the bottom of the 8th for insurance. Sam Dyson came in because of the tired bullpen, got his first save of the year, no problem. They won 5-2. And at that point, before yesterday's game, the Giants, who, you know, when we were lamenting after the the San Diego series, you know, they were 4-9. And I mean, that's a really bad record. But suddenly they're 7-9, and they're one game back of the Dodgers, who had lost 6 in a row. And I'm sitting there going, What? Like, I haven't been keeping tabs on the Dodgers, and to realize they got swept by the Cardinals and lost the first two games of the next series, and suddenly the Giants are one game back of the Dodgers. I was like, wow, this is fantastic. You know, it separated a little bit yesterday because the Giants went in and laid an egg yesterday and almost got no hit if it wasn't for a Longoria bouncer through the 5.5 hole. Did you see Manny Machado, not Manny Machado, Nolan Arenado, how pissed he was for missing that? He didn't miss it.
It was like a foot away from his glove.
He was like, dude, close. No one could have gotten that. I mean, it was
Kareem
perfectly
was not getting that.
It was a perfectly placed ball. It was fairly well hit, you know, but on the ground. And it just got through the 5.5 hole. But I just as a baseball fan, I really respect what his reaction was. Because, you know, he's there for not only the team, and he had a 3-run home run earlier, which gave him that 4-0 lead. So he was kind of one man show. But to miss that ball, even though there's no one in the planet that could have gotten that from his position, but to see him slam his glove down and yell some obscenities was pretty cool to see, because it's kind of like, man, he really tried for his pitcher. I mean, he gave it his all, and he was like, you know, damn it. You know, you're not going to see that on a normal ground ball. He's going to dive and miss it and go, oh, it's a base hit. But, you know, this time it was a difference between a no-hitter and a one-hitter. And he was bummed about it, but obviously as a Giants fan, we're all very happy about it. We didn't want to talk about a no-hitter because their offense is already so poor.
That was so bad. You know, it's funny. You mentioned that. I remember Yasmiro Petit, when he was perfect gaming the Diamondbacks into the 9th, and then the ball dropped right in front of Hunter. Hunter's reaction, very similar. Really wanted it for his guy. I think Nolan hadn't felt like part of the team this year because he hadn't contributed a lot offensively. Like, that was his first home run yesterday.
That was the first home run of the year.
Yeah, so it was one of those days where he finally felt like, all right, you know, I'm back. And so he felt like he should have made every play. Yeah. But, I mean, there was nothing he could do about that. And thank goodness for Longoria. The Giants still have not been no-hit in – let me get this right. The Giants have still not been no-hit in Pac Bell, SBC, AT&T, Oracle Park history.
That's right. If I recall, they were no-hit in Cincinnati in, like, 2013 or something, right?
Yeah, Homer Bailey.
Something like that. Yeah, oh, that's right, Homer Bailey. Like, what the hell, Homer Bailey? Right. Yeah,
Marquez.
So.
I mean, come on.
Well, he was sporting an 0-3 record and a 6.6 ERA coming into this game. So he didn't exactly look like you know, the prime candidate for a no hitter. But no, he reduced his ERA significantly going the distance there. But they lost 4-0. It was a game that finally you could say it wasn't just one pitch or one hit or one play that made the difference. They were crushed. They just were. I mean, like you said, 4 runs was the biggest deficit, the biggest loss they've had all year. But 4 runs still for their biggest loss in 17 games isn't too bad. So I'll hang with that. So the Giants had a great week for us anyway, and for them going 4-3 overall. They have a 7-10 record. They are fourth place in the NL West, 4 games back of San Diego. So yeah, let's talk about some more of the specifics stat wise. Pilar has been incredible. He's got, what, 13 RBI on the season. No one's even close to him for that. But he's still hitting 155 on the season, Eric. It's a little weird. Like, it's everyone's praising this guy, and I am too. And he's won single-handedly several games for the Giants. So he's picking the right spots to get the big hits. But overall, he's not exactly a hitting machine right now. But we'll take whatever we can get. We'll take a guy who hits 155 with a bunch of bombs. I do suspect things are going to balance out. He's going to hit for far less power. He's not known for being a power hitter. And his average is going to climb up. So, you know, hopefully it'll kind of even out and he'll be more of a normal player. But it's been a little bit of a weird week for this guy.
Yeah, I've been warned that he strikes out a lot and doesn't take a lot of walks. And he hasn't taken a walk yet as a Giant.
Is that true? Wow.
Yeah. It's not. And that, I think, is, you know, contributes to batting average being so low. But, I mean, to lead the team in homers and RBIs after joining them, you know, kind of – I mean, I know it was – it feels like it was in season, but now that they've played 17 games, he really only missed the first four games in San Diego. Yeah. So he's got a pretty decent sample size going for himself with the Giants. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it is concerning, though, that their best bat, quote-unquote, is doing that. You know, you want to go into the numbers. You wrote it. What is their team batting average?
It is 199.
Which is nationally worst. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
199, which is just – they're all bad. I mean, the Dodgers lead with a 284 batting average.
Yeah.
That's – you know, I mean, only the Indians are worse than the Giants in all of baseball. The Rockies are just as bad, though, and that shows why they were able to beat up on them. But yeah. When you're running – I mean, I stats will probably back me up on this. I don't even have to look at it. But when you're running Buster Posey out there in the 3 and the 4 hole every day, and he's hitting like 198, and when you're putting Longoria, really, aside from the base hit yesterday, he hasn't had a lot of big contributions this season at all.
No.
I think, what, he had the one home run in San Diego, and that was it. His biggest contribution so far seems to be making Pilar feel comfortable. You know, and then you got Parra. Parra hasn't really done much. He has not driven the ball with power yet. Anything he's gotten has kind of been a flare or something like that. Like, the whole team's just not hitting, which is why they are winning 1-0, 3-2, like, you know, you said. And, you know, 7-2 victory the other night, that might be their biggest blowout for like another month. That was amazing.
It might
but
be.
None of them are hitting. Yeah, none of them are hitting at all. Joe Panik seems to be the only one making consistent contact with the ball. Even then, he's still batting like 209.
Yeah, no, it's bad. I mean, let's just talk about who's not right now and our who's hot, who's not. Yeah, Solarte, for the last week, is one for his last 18. Crawford in the last week, 3 for 23. That's a 130 clip. Parra, 167. Duggar, 185. Like you mentioned, the Giants are now at an NL worst 199 and lowest in runs per game at 2.76 and lowest in home runs with 10, which, by the way, is the same total as a single player, Chris Davis from the A's. I mean, a whole freaking team has hit as many home runs as one individual on the A's. This is not good, man. If you look through their stats right now, and this is year to date, not even just the last seven, the only guys hitting over 300 are Austin, who's 3 for 9, which is like, okay, and Madison Bumgarner, who's also 3 for 9 with a home run and 2 RBI. Below that, you got Sandoval, 292, and then it drops off. Like,
wow.
Just
a cliff.
It's a huge cliff. So after Sandoval, who's been pulling his weight, didn't mean a bad pun there. Yeah, the next highest is Crawford at 228. Duggar, 224, Belt, 218, Posey, 213, Panic, 209, and then the entire rest of the team. Everyone else is below 200. Every single player. I mean, this is bad, dude. I mean, this is like, I know the team is not going to hit 199 for the year, so I guess we can look at that as a positive in that they can only get better, because no team in history, as far as I know, has ever hit 199 or below 200 for a year. But holy shit, I mean, this is really bad. This is really bad. Now, if they do come back around in terms of hitting, you know, hopefully their pitching also doesn't take a complete dump, because transitioning into who's hot right now, my God, the Giants team pitching, fantastic. Second in the National League with a 2.75 ERA and WHIP at 1.06 and batting average against a 221. The relievers are even better. They're pulling most of the weight in terms of the stats. They lead all of baseball with a 1.77 ERA. And the next closest National League team is pretty close to double that.
Oh, wow.
3.14. I mean, think about that. That is absolutely incredible. There's some AL teams in there that are like in the low twos. But as far as the NL, the Giants have like a 1.4 lead on the next closest team. So, I mean, their relievers have been absolutely hands down just incredible. And so my point is, even if the Giants hitting gets better, which it should statistically because of the swings of the baseball season, of course their pitching is not going to have a 1.77 reliever ERA for the year. That's not going to happen.
Why not?
So, well, I mean, it might be the best ever in Major League history.
Well, but I'm just saying, their bullpen's been pretty darn good.
It's been incredible. It really has been incredible. So what are you going to do? I mean, yeah, as far as who's hot, I mean, we talked about Pilar with 4 home runs and 12 RBI. Did you know that for the last week? Because he had all 12 RBI in this past week. This past 7 games, no one on the team has had more than 1 RBI. Not one. That's like, what?
And they won 4 of 7 games.
I know. That's why it totally magnifies Pilar's contributions. He had 12. No one else had 2. Everyone else had 1 or 0.
This team should be 5 and 12, not 7 and 10.
Clearly. Yeah, no, this team has gotten a few extra wins. Obviously, with the whole expected win loss, they added that column, by the way, in MLB.com. It's pretty interesting, their expected win loss. Their expected record. The Giants' expected record is actually 7-10 right now. But, of course, that's with the contributions of Pilar. That just has to do with run differential, which the Giants are now -8 for the year. You know, which is whatever. That isn't too bad. They play a lot of low-scoring games. There's some teams that are like, you know, the Marlins, I think, are like -30-something in run differential. So the Giants are 7-10, and they only have been outscored by 8 runs cumulatively. So that's not too bad.
I mean, again, that's what makes it amazing, though, that they are able to stay competitive even though nobody is consistently hitting the ball. Yeah. They, aside from that 6-run second inning against San Diego, that was a lot of S's, Susie, Seashore, Seashells. aside from that, they really haven't exploded and put together an inning where, you know, the carousel just keeps spinning and guys just keep going around the bases.
Yeah.
And even that felt aided. I know Pilar got a double on that, but I really thought Renfro could have played that better in left field. But, like, you know, they do take advantage of opportunities, and they don't give other teams opportunities. Their fielding's been excellent. Having Duggar and Pilar running around in right and center field has been phenomenal. And then you throw Parra in there. I mean, every time the ball goes up in the air, these Giants pitchers must think, oh, okay, good, that's an out.
Yeah.
Because Duggar's running. He ran one down yesterday where he had to come all the way from right center field, and he caught it by the right field line. You know, he's getting great jumps on the ball. Pilar is Superman for a reason. You know, he made a nice diving catch the other day, as well as tracking down balls. Like, these Giants pitchers, they must love it. See, whenever a ball goes in the air, especially when you're playing at home in San Francisco, you know, it's just a matter of how all this all translate when they go on the road. Because if the Giants want to stay competitive, they're going to have to, you know, put together some 500 road trips, and they got 8 games coming up on the road now, so they got to go at least 4-4 if they want to stay relevant.
I agree. It's great that these pitchers can rely upon just a solid defense right now. It's a far cry from my 9- and 10-year-old team that we were missing 3 boys who play travel ball, you know, our best players, on Saturday because they play travel ball on Saturdays. And so for the first time this year, we only had 9 instead of 12. And so everyone played, but they played in a lot of positions they're not normally used to. So, yeah, it's one thing to have a pitcher walk a bunch of kids, but then when you finally get a ground ball to the shortstop and he throws to your first baseman who drops the ball multiple times, that becomes a little annoying. But the Giants don't have to deal with that, which is really nice.
It stands out when they make an error right now. And,
oh, it really does.
And it's good to see because a team that's struggling could, you know, screw up other fundamentals. But Bochy seems to have a wrangle on things. And the fact that Zaidi went out and got Pilar and even Austin, even though he hurt his arm playing left field because he hadn't thrown the ball that much lately. That was kind of ridiculous to me. But I actually think he's, you know, they were decent additions. And I think if Austin's in the lineup more against lefties, he'll get his hits in. He seemed to put together good at-bats. He worked some counts. He got a walk here and there to help keep rallies going. He was in the middle of one of the rallies during the Padres series. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with the addition of that, hopefully they can start, you know, when those bats come around, if those bats come around.
So you have a little note here talking about a bit of an anniversary that you have today. Why don't you
Well, I thought it was funny because it popped up on my Facebook memory thing. 6 years ago, I got an email from Willie Dills inviting me on as a guest to TortureCast after a post I had written on twoouthits.com called Right Team, Wrong City. And it was all about how I grew up as a Giants fan in the Chicagoland area. And it piqued Willie's interest. So he's like, you know, all right, let's get in touch with this guy, see if he really knows, you know, his Giants baseball. And brought me on my first episode as a guest. And actually, Willie did a quiz between Chad, you, and I to see who knew Giants history better. And I think the only question I got caught up on was when Dravecki, who were they facing when Dravecki's arm happened? And I think that was the only one I couldn't remember of all of them. And you guys accepted me. So I just want to say thanks to Willie, who's obviously not here, but thanks to you, too, for always, you know, welcoming me and letting me stick around even, you know, after being a guest. And, you know, it's a good thing that the listeners haven't written in saying, get that guy off the podcast yet. So I'm just happy that 6 years ago an email popped up in my inbox from Willie Dills. And the rest, as you say, is history because I love being able to talk Giants baseball every week.
Yeah, I just think it's funny because, you know, when Willie and Ben had invited me to be on the show too, I had a similar experience as you. In fact, I was just looking because I saw that note in the show notes and I actually had marked this down in my calendar. So I just looked it up. The very first TortureCast podcast was June 12th of 2011. The first segment I ever did for TortureCast, which was called Out of Left Field, which was like a short little 2-minute segment they would put in the middle or end of the show, which would talk about some statistical oddities for the Giants, aired on July 17th of 2011. So shortly after they started the podcast, because I found them because I really did a lot of gaming stuff that I was involved with. And then they invited me to be a guest on August 16th of 2011. So it was like 1 month after each event, you know, kind of went from segment to like co-host or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, this year will mark my, technically this is my 9th season on the pod. Oh, my God. That's a lot. This is my 9th season. Granted, the first season was at the end of the season, but this is my 9th season, 8th full season being on the podcast. But it was 3 guys from the Bay Area. And then you come along and I'm like, he's in Florida. What the hell? Like, it was hard to like comprehend you were a Giants fan. But then, of course, meeting you when you came out and understanding your history. I mean, you're just such a well-versed Giants fan and you have just such family connections with your father and everything. And it's just been, you know, great having you aboard. And obviously with Willie, you know, I know at the beginning of the show, we have a little stinger with Ben and Willie's name still on it. They're still always going to be a part of the show and they're always welcome back. It's something that they started that you and I kind of glommed onto and were invited to. And we're running the show right now, which is true. But it's not to say that they're never going to be involved again. Willie's always going to be on a show or two a year. You know, Ben maybe as well. But, you know, I just want to personally thank those guys for starting the podcast and inviting you and I on because that's what it's kind of turned into now. And it's something that, you know, is fun for me. And, you know, I did a parenting podcast for about 4 or 5 years. I did a gaming podcast. I've done other things. But nothing's lasted as long as this. This is the one thing that hasn't pod faded, you know, because
pod faded.
I've always been a Giants fan, and this is fun for me. So anyway, I'm glad you kind of share the same, you know, sentiment. And, you know, it's a little bit of work and some time, but it really isn't, you know, it's not a 40-hour a week job. So we're having fun.
They liked you better, man. They brought you a month and then a month. For me, I was on in April, and then I wasn't on again until I went to San Francisco in August.
And then I they finally met you. They had to meet you, man.
That's true. And then I became a recurring guest and then really joined after the 14 playoffs. I was there for the 14 run on every single episode, but I was still a guest, and then I fully joined the program after that run because, you know, I'm obviously the good luck charm because they've won so many titles since then.
Clearly. And speaking of which, we'll have some guests on this year. I've already been in touch with a few people that I will reserve their names for right now until they're confirmed, because I don't want to, you know, say this person's going to be on and then they bail, but... So, yeah, we're going to mix it up this year, but I'm having a lot of fun. And, you know, look, the Giants aren't going to be good this year. I think we all know that, but there is a little bit of a sense of a lowering of stress in a way, because those championship years, which were more than fantastic, and I really wish they could do that every year. And Bochy said he wants one more shot for his final year. But the reality is it's, you know, I used to get pretty upset when the Giants lost. Now it's kind of like, oh, they lost. Okay, well, moving on. And I can enjoy more of the idiosyncrasies of the game and the little storylines and the interstitial development of players and the little, you know, tiny bits and minutiae of the game. So it's a different way of experiencing the game. We're used to the Giants winning. So it's a little bit different in the last couple of years. But, you know, every team goes through these ups and downs, and we never want to be the podcast that, you know, will go away when the team is bad. That's not being a fan. So we're always going to be there.
I mean, we were Giants fans through the 80s and 90s, so...
Yeah, we've been through a lot of shit, you know?
that's basically how I earned my street cred with you guys, is y'all understood that I had the same pains and heartaches that you guys did, the 2002, 93. These all stick in, you know, they still hurt to think about. Salomon Torres, like...
Yeah,
you know,
oh boy.
Right?
Why are you starting him?
Right? I'd love to do an oral history with Dusty and Solomon and other Giants coaches and stuff that were there for that decision on game 162 and 93. I'm sure I'll never get that opportunity, but I mean, that'd be fascinating to learn how they came to that decision.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good one to bring up with Dusty as he punches you across the face.
Right. I've heard about that enough.
Crap. F you. All right, so you have a little bit of a minor league report. Yeah, I've been keeping tabs on some of these guys too, but I assume you have some news about these guys.
There's minor leagues have been underway now for a little over a week, and so I just want to highlight some of the names that we know since it's still early. There's not really, you know, anything to say like, oh gosh, somebody hit 20 home runs in a month. But, you know, like in AAA Sacramento, the River Cats are 6-5, and Mac is with the River Cats, and if everybody was wondering, he is 6-24, hitting .250 with 0 extra base hits. And he has struck out 9 times. So Mac is now starting off his quest.
Sorry, Ferris Bueller reference.
Good movie, very good movie. He is not starting off too well. But Tyler Beede is continuing to bring his spring training form into the season. He's pitched a total of, 7 2/3 innings, and he's only allowed 1 earned run while striking out 13. So Beede looks okay so far, and, you know, I guess everybody's kind of rooting for him to get himself back on track because he was a bit of a disaster when he came up. Uh-huh. And then down in San Jose, the single-A ball club, they're 5-5. Joey Bart, he has caught, from what I read, he's caught 7 guys stealing. But it might be 8. They were talking about this on the Giants broadcast yesterday. So as a catcher, in 9 games behind the plate, Joey Bart has caught 8 guys stealing and apparently picked 2 other guys off,
which
is just phenomenal to think about, just how much higher his talent level seems to be than the players that he's playing with around him.
Right.
I mean, just to be that aware and that baseball smart and doing those things is impressive. And he's not hitting too bad either. He's 9-32 with 2 homers. He's driven in 8, and he's only struck out 4 times in 32 at-bats.
Huh. Really?
Yeah, so he's starting off well. So I figured I'd hit a couple names we knew. check in on them. We'll see how they progress. I bet Joey shoots his way up through the system. It's unfortunate that Mac is starting off so poorly.
Yeah, I know. All right, so you have a new little game segment, which I'm a little nervous about, but why don't you take it away?
I decided to bring a new segment to the podcast this season. It is a game show, and I was going to play the game show sounds through the computer, but it wasn't seeming to work. So let's see if this works. So today, welcome to the first installment of Guess That Giant. It's the segment of the podcast where I quiz Chad and you, the listener, on different topics and facts about a giant, and you try to guess that giant. So you at home can play too and try to guess it before Chad. And if you do guess it before Chad, let us know on our Facebook page underneath this post if you can.
And how I bet I am.
Let's play Guess That Giant.
Oh, boy.
All right, it's not going to be hard. It's just a few facts, leading things to make you pick who it is. All right, so this Giants player grew up in Newark, Ohio.
Oh, God.
So that probably doesn't do anything yet for
you. No. Don't know any Giants players in Newark, Ohio. Sorry.
Okay.
This is a current Giants player.
Yes, these are current Giants.
25-man roster.
Current 25-man roster. Okay. Yes. So no Connor Joe. No Michael Reed. Right. Man, I already forgot that guy's name. All right. He grew up in Newark, Ohio. All right. So if anybody out there knows that off the top of their head, good for you. You probably live in Ohio. All right. He is a big fan of the University of Michigan, especially all their sports. He's also a big fan of the Columbus Blue Jackets and, for some reason, the Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, jeez.
So a kid from Ohio, loves Michigan sports, also the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Dallas Mavericks.
Steven Duggar.
Incorrect.
All right.
I had a buzzer sound, but since I didn't have it all set up, I didn't get it.
Someone else is kicking me right now. They're going, I can't believe you don't know this.
Well, yeah, because this guy definitely has posted on social media about these teams, especially recently with the retirement of Dirk Nowitzki.
All right.
He developed the 60 feet 6 foundation to fight leukemia, especially in kids. And he has had that foundation for a few years before signing with the Giants. So he grew up in Newark, Ohio. He's not originally a Giants player.
Yeah.
Big fan of Michigan sports, Blue Jackets, Mavs, 60-foot-6 foundation. Not originally, but the Giants. 60-foot-6 foundation to fight leukemia, especially in kids. I'll give you a guess here.
Tyler Austin.
No, good guess, though. I debated doing it, but I don't have enough information. You're going to get it here.
Don't hold me to that. This is a bad start already.
He signed. I'm out of facts after this one. I have to. I give you credit that this will be the one. No pressure. I should find the bell. No pressure.
I'm going down in flames, everybody.
All right. He signed as a minor league free agent before the 2018 season and led the team last year with 30 starts, 171 innings pitched, and 169 strikeouts.
Oh, Derek Holland. No? Yeah?
You are correct. Derek Holland is the answer.
Only had to exhaust all the clues.
That's right. I didn't know how many I was going to need.
Get a few more clues for next week.
Thank you for tuning in to this first segment of Guess That Giant with your host, Eric Nathanson. We'll be back next week with the same contestant, Chad King. Better luck next
week. I love this. This is great.
Let's guess that, Chad.
It's going to keep me honest, everybody. So sorry for all of you yelling at your speaker right now going, I can't believe you didn't know.
I have no idea if I would have known these facts if I hadn't looked them up, if the media guy literally wasn't sitting right in front of me, if I didn't have that. So who knows if I would have known.
That's great. All right, so that's going to be a weekly segment, and I love it. I'm totally in. That's good.
Awesome. So if you get it quicker than Chad, feel free to heckle on our Twitter, our Facebook page. Well, heckle's not the right word, but, you know, just tell us how smart you are.
Shame. All right. So, you know, it's interesting. Today is Jackie Robinson Day, right? So the Giants aren't playing on Jackie Robinson Day. Now, apparently they are going to wear number 42 tomorrow with the Nats. So they're going to extend it. But it's just odd. Usually all the teams play on Jackie Robinson Day, as far as I recall. But it's interesting. But I guess, you know, it's because it's a date. So it doesn't always sometimes it falls on travel days or whatever. So it's understandable. But
yeah, today's a Monday, and Mondays aren't always full.
Yeah, it's like Mondays and Thursdays are often travel days, so it's understandable. But they'll still wear 42 tomorrow, so that's still good. They're going to honor him. But you have another segment this week in Giants history.
Oh, yeah, coming Wednesday. So I guess before the second game of their series in Washington. I've done 2 weeks. This week in Giants history is back again this Wednesday. I'll be looking into the first Major League Baseball game played in California. It was on this date, April 15th, back in 1958. So it's this awesome. Week in Giants history, hence the fact that I can milk it till Wednesday. And the Giants beat the Dodgers 8-0 in the first ever Major League Baseball game, not even just in California, but on the West Coast, in the Western time zone, any of those things. So that look for that on Wednesday. That'll be this week's This Week in Giants History. I did that last week.
It was a big deal. I mean, if Brooklyn and New York had not moved, then we wouldn't be Giants fans most likely. I'm just going to say that right now. I mean, you know, I wouldn't have been a fan of the New York Giants if they had stayed there. If I was living in California, probably would have ended up an A's fan or something, right? Assuming that still would have happened. So
I was about to say, who knows if they would have come out. I mean, there's five teams in California now, right? Mm-hmm, five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Padres were an expansion team. The Dodgers and Giants moved in 58. The A's came from Kansas City, you know, and the Angels were another expansion team. So, but the Giants and the Dodgers were the first to play Major League Baseball on the West Coast. And that was a huge move because, you know, this is a time in the country where air travel was common. It was becoming common. But prior to that, everything was kind of based on train and some air flights, and certainly train before that. So this really was an expansion across the entire continent and the country for baseball, and a really big moment in the sport itself. And to be honest, a moment for a lot of North American sports because of that distance that needed to be traveled to play a series. And baseball is unique because there's so many games throughout the year. It's not like football where you have a week off. You know, you can travel. You can go train across the country or halfway across the country. Baseball, it's like you got a series of three. You got a series of three. You got a series of three. And like the Giants right now, they have an off day, of course. But, you know, traveling all the way across the country to Washington, D.C. to play their East Coast trip. It's pretty amazing that, you know, the country kind of evolved to that point where we can support the infrastructure to transport, you know, not only 25 players, but all of the equipment and all of the staff and all of the broadcasters and just, you know, probably a couple hundred people and all of their equipment per game, dozens and dozens and dozens of times per year times 30 teams. It's pretty astounding how much gets moved across the country throughout a baseball season.
Yeah, all the time stuff shifting from place to place. And I'll talk about this in the piece, but part of the reason that the teams moved together was Major League Baseball wanted it set up so that teams could now take a trip out to the West Coast and hit both San Francisco and Los Angeles instead of, you know, having to fly there multiple times during the year. Yeah. Because St. Louis was literally the farthest west.
Isn't that
Major
crazy?
Baseball was. Yeah,
St.
That is.
Louis. I mean, and that is much closer to the East Coast than the West Coast. So
yeah,
that's pretty freaking astounding. But here we are with, you know, doing things like the Mexico series that just happened. And they're going to be, the talk is they're going to be doing special games and series in Europe in the future, kind of like the NFL has done. And who knows, you know, 5-10 years from now, we could have a team, you know, in Mexico or maybe even Europe. And that'll really make things a little wonky. But I think that's a little bit further down the road. We don't need expansion right now. We don't need expansion right now.
One note on that, you mentioned Jackie Robinson, and it's funny that that was also the 15th, and today is Jackie Robinson Day. It was during that offseason that Jackie was traded from the Dodgers to the Giants, and he refused to sign with the Giants and retired instead.
Yeah, he retired instead. In fact, I was listening to a story this morning about how at the old Coliseum, the locker rooms were in center field, and they were actually right by each other. A thin drywall separated the locker rooms. And so you could hear commotion in each locker room through the wall. And the rumor has it, this is according to Kruko, and of course he wasn't there, he just heard it from people he played with. After the Dodgers and Giants played, especially when the Dodgers won, Jackie Robinson was known for yelling and screaming profanities and how they kicked the Giants' asses and all that stuff while he was standing right next to that wall to ensure that the Giants players heard him. And I had never heard that story before. I thought that was really, really interesting. So that completely, you know, dovetails into what you just said, which is true. He, you know, was going to be traded to the Giants, and he said, no, F that. I'm a Dodger through and through. I'm retiring. So, I mean, that's the roots that this rivalry has. And
I love that.
It's really, really cool. No matter how much I hate the Dodgers, I respect his feeling and his sentiment against the Giants because, you know, it's got to be both. It's got to be true both ways, you know, and that's fine. So it's really, really cool. Obviously, we all love Jackie Robinson and what he did for baseball and what that meant for baseball and really civil rights in America, too. So it wasn't just baseball. Pretty amazing man. It was really cool that Major League Baseball many years ago retired his number and now have Jackie Robinson Day. So really cool stuff. Looking forward to your post about the first game on the West Coast. And by the way, did you pay your taxes?
Yes, thankfully.
Yeah, I lingered. I had it all done like 3 months ago, but we had such a massive tax hit from the new Trump tax bill, which I will not get political, but let's just say it's definitely not better for me and my wife than it has been in the past. So we were trying to work every angle we could, but we finally had to bite the bullet and do the online payment last night. And oh, did it hurt.
Yeah,
but it's
very
done.
Very similar experience. Very
do your civic duty, everybody.
Dragging it out. Very similar. Wait yep. until the last second. Very similar activity.
I did all the work 3 months ago.
Yeah, kind of one of those, oh, yeah, did we go back to that? No, we didn't. Oh, we should better do that. It's two
you
days
better do
away.
That. Yeah, and yeah. Property taxes were 3 days ago, too. So it's been a bit of a double whammy here. So I'll be asking for donations soon on torturecast.com. I'm just kidding. All right, so the Giants have a very long East Coast trip coming up this week. They're going to have three in Washington starting tomorrow night. Tonight is an off day. Today's an off day. Then they have three in Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh, by the way, is the team that is leading all of the National League in ERA, barely over the Giants. But point being, they have good pitching right now. The Giants do not have good hitting. One of these things has to cave. So we'll see what happens.
Boring games in Pittsburgh, man.
There might be some very low-scoring games in Pittsburgh, but we'll see what happens. But other than that, you can follow us collectively at TortureCast on Twitter, like us on Facebook. We even have an Instagram account now that Eric's been doing a great job on. We're trying to post all of our daily game summaries on the web, so look for those on Facebook and otherwise. Obviously, Eric has been posting a lot on TorchCast.com, where you can find these episodes as well. You can follow us individually at 2OutHits for Eric. That's with the number 2. Myself at ChadK21. Do you have anything else to pimp or talk about?
No, I've built all my pimping into the show.
Yeah, it's good stuff, though. I think this is probably, over the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 years, one of the strongest leads we've had coming into the season, which has been great. We've been having just great interaction and dialogue with listeners and other people, so we're pretty stoked about it, and we're really jazzed about doing this for you and the fans, and I'll be honest with you, they have all these things like the Giants Insiders or Triples Alley or whatever on Comcast. By the way, a few like Cole Kuiper, you know, Dwayne Kuiper's son is on that show now. Grant Bisbee's on that show. Carmen Q has joined the show as well. So we're starting to see kind of this grassroots, you know, people who were just podcasters or Twitter personalities coming up and doing this, you know, post-game summaries or whatever in front of their laptops, in front of the camera, which is pretty cool. And so we may have some of those people on the show this year. But I will say this, it's pretty surprising that over the 9 years that I've been a part of this podcast, there's not really been any other podcast that has sustained over this duration of time. And even now, there's not really many Giants podcasts, if any at all. So besides, you know, some of the reporters like Alex Pavlovic, you know, has his own Giants Insider podcast and things like that. But that's a given. He's a reporter. He has all that inside access.
Hank Shulman has one, and he had a really good half-hour sit-down with Dwayne Kuiper from about a couple weeks ago.
Oh, did he? So I missed that
one. Yeah, if you can seek that out, look for – I don't know what the name of his podcast is. It's some reference to Giants baseball.
Old Curmudgeon podcast. Yeah, I don't
know. Right? Well, they were two old curmudgeons.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, yeah, there'll be some bathroom talk. Literally, they talk about their timing for the bathroom. But it's a very, very funny
okay, I got to give that podcast. A listen.
Yeah, it's a half hour. It's quick. It's just a nice little hit with Kipe and, you know, swapping stories from back in the day.
But anyway, hopefully, you know, we still entertain from a fan's perspective, and I'll definitely be attending some games again this year. We'll bring those to you. But other than
just
that,
just because the team is not, you know, out there winning championships doesn't mean we're not trying to have fun this season. And
no.
I appreciate the listeners and the fans going along for the ride as well.
Yeah, it's been great. And thank you for your patronage. We really do appreciate it. It definitely makes this podcast go. I mean, hell, if five people were listening, we'd still do this podcast just because we are into S&M or something. I don't know. But, you know, we've gotten some good
torture.
It is called torture. That's actually exactly what people ask me who are not Giants fans. What do you do? I host this podcast called Torture Cast. They're like, oh my God, is that like all leather and stuff? Like, no, dude, it's long story. Never mind. I know. Maybe not the best choice of podcast name, but we're sticking with it, baby, because this is for Giants fans, and Giants fans know what it means.
Right.
Exactly. We can't change it now to something like the Giants podcast or, you know, something like that. I mean, it's like, okay, no. We got to go with kind of inside, inside the clubhouse knowledge. All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 161. For Eric, this is Chad King signing off, and we'll see you next week. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.